Today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
I go back to high school. Okay, now, let's see. Time circuit's on. Flux capacitor fluxing. Engine running. All right. If you don't hear from me in a while, it's because I'm stuck in 1985. All right, this is a special episode of Rockin' the Suburbs. I am without Patrick Foster. He is off doing whatever he does. Sometimes, you know, it's hard to keep track of his goings on. And so what I thought I would do is I'm going to start like a three-part series here exploring the music that I listened to in my younger days. And so my name is Jim Linehan, and I have with me two friends from high school over the Zoom recording setup here. One of them you guys have heard on the podcast before. Actually, both of them you heard on the podcast before, but one of them I think you guys know fairly well. His name is Jim Petrillo. He's out in Southern California, and he's also known as Echo Park Jimmy, and he calls into the show a lot, and he's also on our Friday Night Hootenannies a lot. And hello, Jim.
Hello. How you doing?
All right. I'm doing okay. So, yeah, we Jim and I know each other since probably junior high, I think. And then also, same timeline here is my friend Matt Beakley. He now lives in Indiana. Hello, Matt.
Oh, hello. Hello.
Okay, so what we're going to do here is we're going to talk about music we listened to in high school. And for the listeners here, our high school was in Toledo, Ohio, E.L. Bowser High. And this would have been the years, I don't know when we started, but we graduated in 85. So whatever that would be, 81 to 85 would be the
exactly. I wrote years. That down.
Okay.
That helped, huh?
I have to go back and look. And that's it. That's pretty much it. That's the topic. So I grabbed some records that I still have from that era in my collection here. Let me grab those.
Well, to set a reference point, I looked up the debut on cable of MTV. It was August 1st, 1981.
Right.
So that means we started high school a month later. So yeah. That really influenced, you know, because young brains are easily warpable. A lot of my memories of the early 80s were, it was determined by MTV.
Yes.
Whether it was Hall & Oates or Bob Dylan, if you saw it on, okay, I saw that on MTV, that's, I can buy that record.
That was huge. Although I'm going to tell you something, I remember this very clearly. We, on the Buckeye Cable System, Buckeye Cable Vision, whatever it was called, we didn't get MTV when it launched. And I believe it was about a year later. Because I remember reading about it in Rolling Stone, and I was like really intrigued by this, a cable channel that just shows music videos. Like, that sounds
right.
That sounds amazing. And then I remember, like, because this was so far before the internet or any way like news got to you. I remember my parents one time opening up like their cable bill that came to, you know, mailed to the house, and it had like little information about new channels were added to the cable system. And my mom hands it to me and says, you know, take a look at this, see if you're interested in it. And one of the new channels added was MTV. And I was like, oh my God, we have it? Like, I didn't even know. It's like let me just ran over to the TV and like turned it on and just like sat there for probably the next 3 years in front of the MTV. And my sister and I would watch it then like every day after school, because my parents both worked, you know, be home alone. Right. And that was like all we watched pretty much all the time was MTV.
A couple of the other things I remember, and this was maybe pre-high school, but growing up listening to WIOT 104.7.
Yes.
Out of Toledo, Ohio, right? The classic rock station. And there were a couple of things, I wouldn't say it was subversive, but there were a couple of things that they would play. I know they would play MC5.
Really?
And they'd even play Kick Out the Jams, and they'd cut the, obviously, the intro and just start with the chord.
Yeah.
The other thing they used to play a lot that I always loved, and it's kind of obscure now, is Jimi Hendrix had a cover of Gloria. It's in the studio, and like he starts talking dirty in the middle of it and so on. But they would always play that. WIOT would always play that. I always really liked it. That was a great cover.
That's cool, because I don't remember that at all. I don't remember, like, all like my whole memories of that station was like Led Zeppelin, Rush, and
The Who,
right? Like, because there's all those, absolutely, like, you know, those classic rock bands, you know?
Yeah.
So that's absolutely cool. I don't remember that.
I don't have that memory, but that gives me faith that there were some DJs at that station,
right,
that were like, we're going to play this. I'm going to play that Rolling Stones track till the end where he says that dirty thing, you know what I mean? Like, you must have had a better ear for that as a kid, because my memory, Beakley, is that you turned me on to all the best music. I was mainly just listening to Night Ranger and Rush, and you're like, hey, have you heard of The Who? You know what I mean? Like, you turned me on to The Who early for someone your age. How did you get into The Who that early?
I can only guess it was from the radio station. I'm trying to remember, like, how many of my friends influenced me, but I can remember mostly you guys, and like our friend Carl Behrens and people like that influencing, like, that was in high school. But earlier than that, like, I can't remember for sure.
Did you like funny Monty Python songs? Because the only brain connection I can think of is like Happy Jack, you know, like Happy Jack.
Yeah.
Like some of the Who songs were kind of silly and irreverent. And in the before the 80s, it was just listening to like comedy albums, like Monty Python and like silly comedy records
Steve Martin stuff.
So, right, Steve Martin.
Yeah.
So maybe my early 80s brain was like, oh, I like songs that are kind of British and you know, catchy. But that's all I can think of is, but the Matt liked The Who really young.
Yeah, well, so I remember The Who was a big band, I think, for all of us in high school. And I think part of it, too, is that they still seemed kind of relevant. You know, like I was showing you guys this. Like, It's Hard came out in, what, 82?
Right.
And Eminence Front was, like, a radio song. I mean, it still seemed like they were putting out songs that people cared about, as opposed to some of the other, like, classic rock bands, right, that were not doing that so much anymore. So, and they still seemed kind of like they were speaking to the youth, in some way, you know, so it seemed like a band that we could get into.
Exactly.
Now, but I want to ask you this, though, because Matt and I are both, you know, oldest in our family. But Jim, you had older siblings, right?
Right. I jotted down where I had a lot of music coming funneling into my head, and I had older siblings.
Right.
So I had my sister had kind of like the 70s cheese coming in, like Barry Manilow. But she also had some Jackson 5 records. Like, she had some, like, Carpenters, but also, you know, some other rock and stuff for a girl. And then my brothers turned me on to R.E.M. earlier than I would have heard R.E.M. And they turned me on to, like, U2 way early. So I had access to all their records. You know, Fleetwood Mac, Tusk, as well as like the more popular Fleetwood Mac, because they were big record buyers
right.
in the late 70s. So I had comprehensive access to all that stuff.
See, I think to a lot of people when they're growing up, if you have like an older sibling, that makes a big deal. That's a big deal because they turn you on to stuff. I didn't have that. So that was like, I remember going to your house, I think, and like your brother, I think it was, would have like cool albums that I would be like, can I borrow this and tape it? You know, stuff like that.
Right. But I think it made your brain more acceptable to college rock than mine. I was stuck in that classic rock for a lot longer. I can tell that you were immediately acceptable to like, oh, what's this?
Yes.
Oh, Pavement, where I'd be like, this is crap. You know, it took me years to like understand like Velvet Underground because I listened to the more traditional classic rock. So, but I want to say my most pivotal moment of those years was the first time I joined the Columbia Record Club. And when I got those 12 records, and I Googled like this, I just Googled like big albums of 1983, but this was like half of the ones I got in that package. Billy Idol, Rebel Yell, Let's Dance, David Bowie, yeah. U2 War, Journey. It was either Escape or Frontiers, depending on when that album came out. And then ZZ Top, you know, the one with all the videos from MTV, like Legs and Synchronicity, The Police was definitely in there, and Def Leppard, Pyromania. So, like, it's, you know, that was the pivot year for me where it's like, I love music. Like, I'm even buying Robert Plant solo albums, you know, like, and like later era Cheap Trick and Queen. Like, I was buying, like, by 83. Cause I don't know if you know, me and Jim were in band and you were in band too, Matt, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. He played the trumpet.
I kind of got sick of it about halfway through high school. Like, and I kind of like quit orchestra or something. And then it was rock and roll and girls. It was like, you know, being a good student and playing, you know, what the teacher tells you. And then the second 2 years of high school, like all hell breaks loose. You know what I mean?
So you're blaming the Columbia Record and Tape Club for your downfall?
Probably. Is that what it is?
Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
Def Leppard, Billy Idol. Those are dirty people. No, I'm just kidding. Bad influences.
All
right, George Thorogood, Johnny Cougar. Right. I went from Brian Adams to Johnny Cougar. I see Brian Adams there.
I pulled out some records that I still have in my collection. Now, there's some from our high school days that I don't have anymore. Like you mentioned Journey Frontiers. I had that record at one point. I don't have Genesis stuff anymore. I wish I still did, because I think I went through a period where, like, maybe it was in the college years or whatever, I was like, no Genesis. That's, you know, no prog rock, right? But I remember we listened to that a lot.
During high school.
Yeah. But here's the stuff I still have. So I have this Prince Around the World in a Day. I remember buying that. I have three Who albums from back in the day. So I have It's Hard. I have Who's Next. And I have this Who's Greatest Hits.
Sure.
Which then just, you know, that was pretty much, I felt like all I needed. But which, by the way, back in the day when you had to buy records, like you had to make, like they cost money, so you had to make a choice. You had to make a conscious choice. When you got a greatest hits, you felt like you got like a bargain, so to speak, for the Who.
Right. That was pivotal. That's what I meant. Up until 83, I was like, oh yeah, Stray Cats. Let's start a nice 50s band and have some ginger ale. You know what I mean? And then I went to see the Who at the Silver Dome on their farewell tour, and then I'm like, give me the sex and drugs, man. I'm not playing oboe anymore.
That's right.
How did Jim and Matt get the cool instruments? Trombone and trumpet. Right. Why? I got the oboe? What the?
So I got my Men at Work album, Business as Usual.
Oh, very pivotal.
This was a big one.
Right. That would be right. The good me.
So this is funny because this is a
good
total
person music.
Right. This is a total MTV band. Like I don't think this band would have made it at all without MTV. Right.
Right. Because you're like, wow, they're from down under. They come from a land down under. They must be really good. Traveling in a fighter combi on a hippie trailhead full of zombies. I met a strange lady. She made me nervous.
she took me in and gave me breakfast. And she said, do you come from a land down under?
And then I have all three of these Go-Go's albums here, too. The first three, Beauty and the Beat, Vacation, and Talk Show were the three that I have
right
here.
Go-Go's. I got Talk Show in that Columbia house, and I was in love with Jane Wiedlin, and I love that cover. It's the colors on it and the photos, and I would stare at that all day because I was 15.
So the listeners perceiving what kind of folks we were in high school.
So Matt, what other memories do you have of high school music?
Well, the other thing I was going to say was going along with this idea of the listeners are sort of figuring out who we were in high school. I would say that music was kind of an escape at that point for me, right? Like I could go home, put on headphones and like forget about.
Yes, totally.
Being picked on at school or your mom yelling at you or Jim's mom used to hit him in the head with a shoe. I happen to remember that.
Well, the most,
a couple of those, I think.
American Fool was a huge album for me by Johnny Cougar. I can remember going to Boogie Records to pay like the exact price, like $7.99, and bringing it home and listening to it. And my mom yelling upstairs that slap me, Bobby Brooks. Do what I please. She's like, I know what that song's about. Turn that down. Like, how does she know? How does she know Jack and Diane? And how does she know that that's kind of a dirty song? Like, all right.
Sucking on chili dough, outside taste freeze. Diane sitting on Jackie's lap, got his hands between his knees. Jackie say, hey Diane, let's run off behind the shade tree. Off those Bobby Brooks, let me do what I please. Say, oh yeah, life goes on long after the thrill of living is gone. Say, oh yeah, life goes on long after the thrill of living is gone. Walk on.
One other band you brought up, Jim, just maybe it was when you were emailing me or did I see it on Facebook in your podcast thing, The Producers?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. You just mentioned them. Yeah.
What was kind of funny was like I liked that band in high school and so when I went in Tidal to find The Producers and there's like, I guess there's like three or four rap bands called The Producers and they're all mixed in, but there were some of the original producer songs like She Sheila was in there.
Oh, yeah. I like right. That. Right.
So it was kind of funny. I was like trying to find it in a streaming engine and it didn't work out sort of thing.
Right.
Yeah, my favorite band for most of those years before and after 83 was always Cheap Trick. I was a loyal fan for all those albums that nobody bought for years. And then they finally had to like make a deal with the devil and do that The Flame song. But I loved all that early Cheap Trick. But that influenced my, like, that's why I like The Romantics and The Producers and Power Pop. Like, I didn't know about Big Star at the time.
Right.
But I loved any of that stuff that was propulsive And, you know, like, I play saxophone and, you know, Huey Lewis or, like, a good chorus, a good hook, you know. So that was my wheelhouse back in those days.
I saw Cheap Trick at the Lucas County Fairgrounds. Like, they played a concert at, like, where the Mudhens used to play. Like, you know, remember they had a stadium? Their stadium was there.
I saw them anytime they came to town. I love Cheap Trick.
Yeah. But I want to ask you guys this. So, I mean, I'm sure, you know, you guys have met all people, you know, from all kinds of places over the years. I'm always struck by, like, you know, like, now I live in the DC area. So, like, I'm friends with people who grew up here, and it seemed like when they were younger, they had access through, like, better radio stations and, like, a better, like, sort of live music scene, you know, like a club, underground club scene, that they had access to sort of, like, more interesting music at a younger age. So I
would agree.
Like, yeah. So what's your feeling about, like, sort of, you know, what we had sort of growing up in Toledo in terms of music? I mean, Matt touched on it a little bit, but
I would say, but I think Toledo and Ohio was sheltered from a lot of things. Like, we never heard of sushi, right?
I don't right.
I mean, it's the Midwest, and there was no internet. You couldn't get information, right? It was very hard. So, yeah, I think I agree with you. I think you're right. There just wasn't a lot of information to us yet available. It's just slow.
So what do you got there, Jim? I see some 45s.
Right. All my albums are kind of mixed in alphabetically, but I have a stack of 80s 45s. And remember when Matt said what kind of people we were, I mean, I was just a horny kid. So, like, Sheena Easton, of course, I love her. I'll get to the other girl that I was in love with, but I have almost every Prince 45.
Oh, wow.
Because Kim Wilde. Do you remember her?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
We're the kids in America. Yeah. I loved her because she was cute, but Berlin, yeah. Sex, I'm a human being. Look at this. This was might get some money on the internet. The Power of Love.
Yep.
On 45. And I used to mow lawns. It's Invisible Touch by Genesis. I had a Walkman and I would mow lawns for, you know, a couple bucks and just listen to Genesis and REO Speedwagon all day. But I would say Phil Collins was a big go-to. Oh, there's Sheena Easton.
Yep.
And because Madonna also.
Yep.
Because she was on MTV. And the Pretending to Crawl album by the Pretenders was huge for me. I don't know why I love that album so much.
Yes.
Oh, sorry. Learning to Crawl with Beck on the Chain Gang, and I went back to Ohio. And they didn't let her in the Hall of Fame, but I loved Pat Benatar.
Yeah.
You know, it's not as timeless as other music, but in the 80s, rock sound was huge.
Yeah, she was big.
And Bowie, like,
yeah, that album's huge.
It was.
My brothers didn't have his Ziggy Stardust stuff, But his early 80s stuff was huge. Like, everybody had that.
I remember being really big when I was in high school, the Let's Dance album. But I didn't really appreciate it till I got older.
Right.
Like, now I love Bowie, but I don't think at the time it connected with me so much.
And then this is another band that I love because they were girls, but Bananarama. But I'm selling myself short. It wasn't just because I liked all these bands because they're girls. The Go-Go's had some really good music. You know what I mean? That documentary proves it. Like,
don't we got the beat. Jim, you're a tremendous slouch. 70s, maybe. Late 70s.
And then Queen was huge for me also. Like, I don't know why I loved Queen, but I think because we were all raised to play music, we loved any music that took skill. Boston, Queen, where you had to really add voices and work on the song for a long time. I think we gravitated towards that.
Yeah.
Like, the Who is an amazing band because it's like Elton John. You know, Bernie wrote the lyrics and Elton sang it. It's like Pete wrote the lyrics and Roger sang it. And then, like, you know, everybody contributed. Like, you know, that's, you know, that was, I love how you said they were still relevant in the 80s because they were still good.
Yeah,
even
that's
without
right.
Keith Moon, they were still really dominant for like 5-6 years after Keith Moon.
Yeah, right. I mean, obviously these were the Kenny Jones years by that point, but it still seemed like a vital band in some way that whereas the Rolling Stones maybe didn't so much anymore, and Led Zeppelin had broken up, and you know what I mean? So the Who,
yeah,
even though they had their heyday in the 60s, they still seemed like they meant something to us for some reason. Really, it's an interesting dynamic.
I got one other name that was real big for me that I don't think either of you guys were really into, but this was because WIOT played it, and that's Bob Seger. Especially like his first five albums where he was much more R&B before he went totally popular. I really enjoyed those albums. I really liked that early stuff.
I have one more question.
Okay.
I've pretty much always liked everything. Where do you think it comes from? Because it has to start in your youth. Where do those people come from that are like, oh, you listen to that? I don't listen to that. Like, they're you know what I mean? Like punk rockers. Where do you get that instinct where you're extremely prejudiced to, like, mainstream music? I think that's what I'm trying to say. Like, I don't like anything that's popular. Where does that come from? Or do you think it's just some people are like that?
I don't know. Matt, you have any thoughts?
No, but I definitely had friends like that. Even in grad school, I had some friends who were like, oh, if it's not Pavement, forget it.
Right.
Right. It's weird. It's like you're going to miss out.
I don't know, but I will tell you this, that I was very excited to go to college and was very much primed to, like, be accepting of, like, new experiences, you know, because I sort of felt like, for whatever reason, I just felt like, you know, Toledo wasn't bad necessarily, but I just felt like there was more, you know, there was something else out there, right? And
yeah,
and so I was really, like, accepting of all of that. But I do remember at the time being like an 18-year-old in my mind thinking that you kind of like had to pick a side. It was like
right,
if I'm going to be into like alternative music now, then that's like all I can listen to, and you can't,
right,
and all the other stuff has to be left behind. You know what I mean? And it wasn't until like a few years or maybe just a couple of years later or whatever, I was sort of like, oh, you can like both, just pick out the stuff you think is good from either one. Like, have your own opinions, right? But I do know that there was and maybe this was also a dynamic of that time, because it was still sort of like, there was still sort of an underground that really doesn't exist much anymore because people have access to everything. But there was a sort of feeling of like, if you were into the alternative scene, then you couldn't like the mainstream stuff, or vice versa. There was like a dividing line.
I chafed against that big time.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'll always listen to Hall & Oates. I don't care how cheesy people think it is.
I mean, I think it was when I learned that like Sonic Youth was like into CCR, that was sort of like, okay, fine. Like, I can go back and listen to those records again. Like, that's cool. And then it sort of like changed everything, right?
But even like the Minutemen covered like Steely Dan, right?
Right.
I mean,
right.
You know, when you're growing up, I can't imagine that most people started with Butthole Surfers, right? They started with the Carpenters, and then it went from there.
Exactly.
Right? You started with the Beatles, and then it, you know, okay.
Yeah.
I got two names that I thought of, and I think, Jim, you might have turned me on to this group in high school, but I'm trying to remember. Did either of you in high school like Squeeze or Elvis Costello?
So in high school,
enough for that age, yeah.
In high school, Squeeze. I had the singles, that Greatest Hits album, singles 45 and under.
You turned me on to them in high school.
Elvis Costello, no. I didn't get into him until I was in college.
Yeah, same as me.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Well, thanks very much, guys. I love talking with you. And if listeners want to share any stories of their own, you know, high school musical adventures, the way you would do that, get ready, Petrillo, the way you would do that is call
612-440-1984.
There you go. Or email rock@suburbspod.com or find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all those at suburbspod, or just open up the window and yell. That's always an option too. All right. He's got the Casio out. Play us out.
Like,
1984.
Yeah, my dog's like, that was terrible.
All right, thanks, guys. It's Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan, and with me has been
Matt Beakley
and James Petrillo, better known as Echo Park Jimmy.
Matt Beakley, Jim Petrillo. Thanks, guys. I'll talk to you later.
The soundtrack to the movie Purple Rain was playing at full blast at this guy named Kyle Kretzinger's house. Ooh. And this girl that I had had a crush on for years, I walked out in the back by the pool and some other guy was kissing her. And I don't know if you've heard a million stories about that probably on the podcast about like how certain songs,
right.
Not that you can never listen to it again, but it definitely can have a really profound impact where that song, whenever you hear that the rest of your life, you're like, oh, that moment of pain and anguish, like, ah.
You have that association that you can't shake, right?
Right. Yeah. It's not always good stuff like John Cusack, you know, playing In Your Eyes. Sometimes it's really like haunting and painful moments of music.
Scarred for life.